Hello, everyone. Welcome to Laser Focus, the deep dive pop culture podcast from Nerdist. My name is Kyle Anderson. Thank you for listening. This week, we are talking about Avatar, the live action Airbender on Netflix. Who better to talk about that with whom to talk about? Wait, that sentence got away from me. Some way that is grammatically correct. But then Roru Sack, who talked to me, six months ago, about Avatar. And specifically Zuko in the cartoon. And we talked at that time about like what we were hoping for with the live action remake and everything like that. So welcome to the podcast once again, Ro. How are you?
Good. Thank you for having me. I feel like I've been eat, sleep, breathing Avatar, the live action Airbender. So I'm glad to add this to the lineup with a fun discussion.
It's totally true. Yeah. If you go to nerdist.com, and look up Avatar, The Last Airbender live action stuff, actually, and cartoon stuff for that matter. All you will find is stuff with your byline because you went hog wild when it came to that.
It's true.
So I think it's safe to say you enjoy it and where it's going and everything like that. What have you heard from like just the internet kind of reaction overall? Are people digging it or are they not digging it?
Yeah, I think similarly to like how I feel about it, I think people are kind of all over the map. Some people are really digging it and are like, I don't understand why people are complaining about it. Like, this is its own thing. It's super good. It's super cool. Like, love it. And then other people are like, this didn't do anything. It didn't take advantage of the chance it was given. It's not really necessary. Like, I don't really like it. I did like it myself, so I think it was a tall order. It was always going to be a tall order to adapt Avatar the cartoon, because Avatar the cartoon is so loved. But like as we've talked about before, sort of the cartoon to live action jump is a very complicated one. So it's not surprising, in my opinion, that some people have really adopted what the live action has to say to them, and some people really reject it.
Mm-hmm. Well, it's definitely different from like, you know, because a lot of people, the show is old enough now that people were like young when it was on the yes. original cartoon, and so they sort of grew up with it, or they found it later on and sort of took it to heart and you know, relived those three seasons over and over and over again. And so it is definitely tough when you see a new interpretation that is quite similar. I do have to say, like, visually, even like the character designs and like, I think the casting is spot on, but it's also like so close to the way that I like the cartoon is derived. And I don't know, like, I can see why people might think that is like unnecessary, but. Right. It's definitely, it's tough to say one way or the other, because like I can see, I hate being a fence sitter, but I can see both sides of this kind of argument.
Yeah. I think it is just very complicated, because like you say, in some ways it's so close, and in other ways it's like something completely different altogether. So I think it's like you approach it and you're like, this will be like really the same, and then you look closer and you're like, but wait, some of it isn't really the same. So I think it is like, it's just, adaptations are always hard, because you're never really gonna please everyone. And we can unpack it, but I think like one interesting thing is like that the cartoon obviously has like a really specific tonality, which is like this very humorous kind of comedy leaning overall vibe, and then it can get serious and intense at times, but then like always has that like sprinkling of humor in. And I think that the live action does try to do that to certain degrees, but then also it like takes sort of the truth of the story, like, okay, so Aang, like, he's been asleep for 100 years, which is like horrifying, and his whole nation is dead, like he has no one left, with Katara's whole like village city has just been completely wiped out. Like, there's all these kind of atrocities happening in the world, and I feel like when you have that in live action, it's really hard to be like, and now we'll crack a joke, you know. I feel like the sort of gravitas of the story as it actually is like much more highlighted in the live action. So if you were kind of looking for that energy that is like so trademark for the cartoon, like I feel like that is something you just can't deliver when you're like actually faced with like, here are the realities and the facts of the story. You know what I mean?
Well, like the pre-credit sequence to the episode one is literally like, you know, people running from firebenders and then the one guy getting burnt to a crisp, like yeah. Pretty, I mean, more graphically than you'd expect. And then, yeah, just in general, it's much more intense in that way. And they do try to keep it. And so what I think is really interesting about the cartoon, and I do think that with the character of Aang, they have been mostly able to do it with the live action, is like, it's this big, huge world, you know, altering, crisis, seen through the eyes of young people, children, especially. Yeah. And Aang is so like exuberant and young and like all this stuff. And, in a lot of ways doesn't seem like he's in any way fit to be the savior of the entire world. And so they have tried to keep that with the live action, which I think is good, because, but like, so at times, and I think the person playing Aang is very good, gets a lot of that like wide-eyed kind of like awe a lot of the time, but is also like, this is a child, and like, it has to, you have to rest the entire series on this child. And so it's like, at times it's like, that is a tall order. Like you said, it's a tall order, I think. So it's tough. Exactly. But I do think that the casting, especially I think the Fire Nation casting, is like really good.
Yeah.
I was very surprised by all that. What's your, I mean, you interviewed some of these people, but what is your kind of take on the casting?
Yeah, I think the casting is like a really interesting, like you say, kind of, there's like an interesting tension to the idea of the casting, because there was kind of a few options on the table. You can cast kind of young and age appropriate, but then you do have these like younger actors, or you could, you know, cast older, and like then you run into those problems of like the 30-year-olds playing high school students, which people never really like love in theory, but then of course they love when actors who are seasoned to take on the roles. So in that respect, there was kind of like this tension, but I think they were right to cast young for these young roles, because it really, I feel, wouldn't have read for some of these ideas if they were indeed older. But, you know, I do think with that, like, yeah, you can tell like some of the actors are younger and some of the actors are older, and that impacts like how one acts. But then I think we have to show it some grace, and if we're going to be like, yeah, cast age appropriate, like in that case, then we have to give a 12-year-old the grace to be a 12-year-old actor, you know. So I think in that case, I'm willing to be like, this was a good idea, these were great fits, like, and then, you know, hope that they, like, their characters evolve kind of with age and like bring more to the table as they get more experience and as their characters become more complicated. And I think we'll see that. So I'm pro the casting. I think a good job was done all around. And yeah, I especially lean to the Fire Nation storyline. And I do think that, you know, I think there is something to it that the Fire Nation character is the oldest of the bunch, and all the other characters around are kind of the adults, you know, Uncle Iroh, Fire Lord Ozai, you know, who are, you know, actors who have been around the block, so to speak.
For sure.
So that's definitely helpful, you know, whereas the sort of Aang, Sokka, Katara storyline, that mostly rests on like the three of them. There isn't that much like adult input coming in.
Yeah. Were you sort of surprised at how, like, I mean, Sokka is definitely like the older brother of the, you know, not just of Katara literally, but of the group, and he seems older in the live action than he is in the cartoon, and I think on purpose, because like right away in the second episode you have that sort of romantic subplot, which I don't think would necessarily work if they were like 12. Do you know what I mean? Like,
right. No, absolutely. Yeah, I think that's very necessary. And yeah, I think they had a good chemistry. I do think that storyline just kind of, it almost had like a harder go than the Fire Nation storyline, because I feel And this partially comes from the cartoon and partially from the idea of adaptation, but it's just like there was just a lot happening and there wasn't maybe a coherent thread of thought to that storyline. It was kind of like, who is Aang? What's he doing? The Earth King. Whereas with, you know, Zuko and Iroh and the Fire Nation, there's a clearer kind of through line to what's happening with these characters. You know, Zuko's hunting the Avatar. He's trying to get his honor back. He's trying to get back to the Fire Nation.
Right.
But with kind of the Katara, Sokka, Aang, there was just a lot happening from different parts of the cartoon. And there's a lot happening with them in season one of the cartoon. So that's kind of where all of that was coming from. But I did feel it was a little less focused feeling than maybe Zuko's storyline, which is why I think that felt maybe more appealing, you know, while
yeah.
watching.
When it was also like, I mean, that's the strongest stuff. Like, it's tough because, like, it's sort of a quest narrative on both sides. You have, like, our three, you know, heroes going and trying to, like, learn all they can so that he can actually be, like, the proper Avatar and all this stuff.
Yeah.
But then Zuko and the Fire Nation has a very clear, like, we need to catch this guy.
Exactly.
And then, you know, all the kind of machinations behind the scenes. I thought, like, Ken Leung as Commander Zhao was spot on. I thought he was great. And different from the cartoon in a nice way.
Yes.
Like, definitely brought his own kind of thing to it. But so I have to tell you about a moment that made me howl with laughter.
Tell me.
It's at the end of the first episode, right? Which I thought was generally pretty good. And that's the longest episode by far.
Yeah.
So they get to the southern, what is it? The southern air, whatever, like that has
temple.
Been decimated.
Yeah.
And Aang is giving his little monologue about stuff. And then you cut to the Fire Nation ship and Zuko is at his desk and he's angrily scrawling on a piece of paper. And then he goes to pin it up on his cork board of like a map and stuff. And it's literally the lamest like stick figure drawing of what Aang looks like, a bald
Aww.
Kid with an arrow on his head. And
oh
I just,
my God.
I howled. It's like, you needed this picture.
He sure did. Zuko sure did need that picture for his vision board. I actually was obsessed, like obsessed. And I didn't get to bring this up in any of the interviews, which was sad to me, but I was obsessed with like Zuko's like journal / diary. I really like a diary, let's say, like, today I chased the Avatar. But I feel like that's just, like, so Zuko. I feel like as, like, a character beat, like, of course Zuko has this, like, obsessive little journal where he, like, sketches Aang and, like, meditates menacingly about, like, catching the Avatar at night. I was just like, yes, like, and I like it because it's kind of, like many things, Zuko, it's kind of like so ridiculous that like you say, it's funny, but like just like completely correct for the character and kind of soft in this funny way. Like, yeah, you're like writing your thoughts about Aang at night, like a teenage girl, you know, about her boyfriend. Like, I really love that. And like, it's just the kind of thing where like, you know, Ozai would be like, why are you wasting your time writing in a journal and drawing pictures? But it's such a Zuko thing to do, which is like,
right.
The whole problem between Zuko and Ozai. So I thought that personally, like I was tickled by like the diary journal situation.
I mean, thematically it all works and everything like that. I just was like, how many bald kids with an arrow on your head are you gonna meet? You gonna forget
Don't
what he looks
forget.
Like? Yeah. Oh, it's him. It's this guy. I needed to draw that, but it was like a joke.
So funny.
It was like a bit in a. Like a Mel Brooks movie, like it was just, or a Zucker Brothers movie, actually. It really made me laugh. And I know it wasn't intentional, but it really, I like was, I had to pause. I was cracking up so much. And my wife was like, what is the deal? And I showed it to her and she did not think it was as funny as I did.
Oh my God. I love that. That's so funny. Yeah. I think that's like really like, you know, I spoke to Dallas Liu who plays Zuko and I really think he nailed sort of the cartoonier sort of aspects of Zuko where
for
you're
sure.
just like, are you as a character for serious telling me you're going to dive into this ice pool that you don't know where it emerges or if it emerges, but that's fine because you have to get to the Avatar. And it's just like, what a crazy, ridiculous character. But like, mm-hmm. that's why you love Zuko. You're just like, oh my God, are you for serious? And Uncle Iroh is just like long suffering in that regard. But like, I thought that part of Zuko, this like you, no matter you, he won't like see sense. He'll always do like the most crazy thing possible. Like, I thought that came through really well and like tickled me.
Yeah. And he also just has no chill at all. Like, he's so obsessed with this. And also like, I got to get there first and all that stuff. Like, which again, like if you have a dad, like Ozai, like you're going to want to, you know, there were a couple moments, speaking of that, where like it's definitely one of those, hey, if you've seen the show, then you know what this means, like, yes. Wink, wink, wink,
yeah.
Which is that, like, the first time you see Azula, it was like, and he's mm-hmm. like, well, you know, she's pretending to be one of the rebels or whatever, and then she, of course, has turned them in, and and then he goes, thank you very much, Azula, and everyone goes, dun, 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 and it's like, yeah, it only works if we know who that is.
yeah, no, that's so true. Actually, that's sort of, I think I've come, this is sort of where I come down on it as an adaptation. To me, it almost strikes me as like when you used to get DVDs and they had deleted scenes and you'd be like, show me the deleted scenes. You know, yeah. It almost feels like a compilation of like extensions of moments we didn't get to see in the cartoon, or those were the things that functioned most powerfully for me, like when Iroh came with Zuko on the ship in exile and we didn't get to see that before, the Agni Kai we didn't get to see that before, or what Azula was doing in the background we didn't get to see that before, like all right. These sort of deleted scene type moments, to me actually that was what appealed the most, because the moments that were more one for one, it's kind of like, yeah, well, we've seen that in the cartoon. So to me, it almost functioned as like an overlay to the cartoon, where I was like, here are like the bonus things that now I get to see that I didn't get before, you know, as opposed to like, this is a new story that I'm experiencing, mm-hmm. you know. And again, I did not watch the One Piece anime, so this is not like to me, it's not clear if I had, would I also feel that way about like One Piece, but I do feel like from whatever perspective I have, to me, the One Piece live action felt like it chose a story from the anime, and then it told that story in a new way and maybe tucked some things in, but like it was telling one story and that's what it was focused on doing, and that's why it just felt like a really cohesive season that like mm-hmm. I didn't necessarily need to watch the anime to be like, here's a show I'm watching, you know, and I'm not super, I can't step back and not have seen that Avatar cartoon to speak to it, but like, I don't know if it did that as much because I was constantly like feeling where it was like, and this part of the cartoon, and this part of the cartoon, right. And this part of the cartoon.
Well, yeah, let's talk about that a little bit, because like this is not a one-to-one, obviously, like they have, it's longer episodes, fewer episodes, but much longer episodes, and don't have commercial breaks and anything like that, but also it's bringing in different parts of, I mean, you wrote a whole piece, but I don't want you to have to like, don't read your piece, but like kind of summarize, like what are some of the things that maybe surprised you that they were bringing in from much later cartoon seasons into the first 8 episodes of the live action?
Yeah, I don't necessarily know that I felt like surprised, but I felt like, okay, like, you know, like Katara's backstory.
Sure.
They kind of hint at it, but you don't actually see the flashbacks until like season 2 and beyond, you know. So it's like they brought that in so you could see it earlier, so you could know the character earlier, and that makes a lot of sense. And then like There was just a lot of like moments and like kind of in the spirit of, I don't think they went too crazy like bringing things from the future into the now, but it's definitely like you could see how they were like, well, as we have this completed piece, these completed character journeys, here's what we can like move up so you can see it now, so you can better understand these characters, as opposed to like waiting till book three or season three or season two. I think the biggest thing was obviously that they brought Azula up because they were like, well, she's going to be this major character.
Right.
She's not in season one of the cartoon at all. Like, let's give her a storyline. But also, I think notably, the storyline they gave her did not directly change anything that happened sort of in the cartoon canon of events. Like, it was more kind of like, let's sort of slip her in without having to change much around, which I thought was interesting and good.
Yeah. I mean, definitely, like, you know, Azula became such a, like a good counterpoint to Zuko. Zuko's having his sort of, like, and we, you know from tweets from the original creator, right? It was one of them. Or no, it was the guy who was going to take over.
The head writer.
The head writer. Yeah. But that if they were to have made a book four, which it all sort of seemed like that's where it was heading, and then they didn't do it. But that it would have been about Azula's kind of redemption, and Zuko would have helped her with that. But as it stands in the actual cartoon, like, she is a good counterpoint to Zuko as he's getting more and more kind of, he's starting to wake up to like how kind of bad everything is around him, and how, you know, the Fire Nation's maybe not acting in the world's best interest and all this stuff. She is like seeming like the absolute true believer, like whatever. Yeah. She seems like an irredeemable villain in the cartoon, even though we know that she would have been redeemed. And so starting her out like that, where, you know, just like somebody who is like actively trying to infiltrate the spy network of rebels, and then just kind of going, ha, 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 ha. Now you're gonna die because of my actions. Like,
right, Azula.
She's truly an interesting character. But yeah, like, I agree, like, she's too important a character. The cartoon's 61 episodes, you have plenty of time to get to know all these people. But like, also with the, you know, Katara's backstory and all that stuff, like you said, is that what you said? That's what you said.
Yeah, that's what I said.
It's like, we need to get that quicker because there's only 8 episodes this season. Who knows how many seasons they're going to get? Who knows how many episodes they're going to get total? Like, you need to be able to say all the very important things about these characters, because otherwise, like, you wouldn't necessarily like also starting with, you know, Aang 100 years ago, like, that's not what the cartoon did. So like, I think that's important too, to get like, he has to accept or even like start to accept the call, like, you are the Avatar before any of that, you know, happened, and we see the beginning of like the downfall and all that stuff. But that does mean that the first episode has a lot of death in it.
It sure does. I also think with Azula for a second, like, I do think it is interesting because I think the live action gave her a clearer motivation than she maybe ever had in the cartoon. And I think Azula is an amazing character in the cartoon, but like, sometimes it just does seem like she's running around being evil because she's evil. And here in the live action, it's like very clear, like, she states in so many ways that like she wants to be the next Fire Lord. And like, maybe that's kind of a subliminal like truth in the cartoon. Like, I guess ultimately you would think that's what Azula would want, but I don't think she ever comes out right and is like, here are my motivations. Her motivations appear more to be like, you know, like, she's just fucking around because she's that kind of character. And you know, sometimes she wants to be like powerful, but that's not exactly a clear motivation. So I think it was interesting that they outright were like, no, what makes Azula tick is that she wants to be Fire Lord. And in the live action, for whatever reason, again, this is not something the cartoon clarified specifically, but like, you would think that since Zuko has been exiled, he's no longer heir to the throne. But in the live action, he's still heir to the throne, even though he's in exile, which is kind of like a thorn in Azula's side. So that's kind of, so she's getting a lot more like motivation and like a clarity to the things that she's doing. So I think that that was an interesting addition that I liked.
You bring up an interesting point, which I hadn't really thought about, but like maybe, you know, some of the criticism that had been leveled against the show is not the visuals or, you know, even the actors, but that the writing is a little bit surface level in a lot of ways.
Mm-hmm.
And I think what you were saying about like a lot of those motivations were implied or, you know, left under the surface in the cartoon is a really interesting, like you'd think a cartoon aimed at, you know, preteens would be, would be very on the surface and tell you all this stuff, but they didn't do that. They were very, you know, and I wonder if like in part of the trouble, you know, cause obviously the original creators left the remake project and all that stuff. And, I wonder if part of that is like, I'm not going to necessarily use the term dumbing down, but like making it clear to everybody that this is what's going on right away.
Right.
So that any kind, you know, the Netflix viewer is generally a casual viewer.
So, yeah.
But,
I guess this kind of ties into my feeling that it is kind of almost a sort of compilation of scene extensions is what I got from it. I think some of it did hit those emotional points and like went deep for sure. But I think sort of what I sort of assess is what prevented it from like maybe going as far as it could, or like going to the place where I feel One Piece ended up going, where it was like, you are deep in the story. You are here with these characters. Sure, there's a source material, but like we are focused on the live action. I feel almost like the cartoon's presence, the need to pull in all of the stuff from the cartoon is kind of what kept it at points from going deeper. Because it's almost like you took so much time to pull in things from the cartoon, like that sort of prevented a certain level of depth because you were just sort of pulling parts in all the time. And then that was almost too much. You know, I think, again, like, I think the best parts, the deepest parts were, like, the parts that were written anew with these characters, as opposed to, like, and now we'll put in this bit and this character from here. And I found the remixing interesting and, like, well done, you know, to the extent that, like, they were able to fit a lot of the cartoon into the show. But I almost wonder if, like, trying to do that a little less and, like, just almost picking a lane is like the way to get deeper. And maybe I feel like season one of the cartoon especially is kind of chaotic and they go a lot of places and there's not necessarily maybe one big storyline that encompasses everything. But like hopefully maybe as the cartoon narrowed in on its focus, like this too can just like, you know, have a cleaner through line and worry less about hitting as many beats from the cartoon.
Yeah. I mean, in a lot of ways, it is a no-win scenario because you have people who are like, you're always going to have people who are like, it's too close to the cartoon, and then other people who are saying it's too different from the cartoon. And, you know, I do feel like there's not, the cartoon is very fast, as you mentioned, and chaotic is a good word for it at times. But like, there's also a lot of breathing room in the cartoon because they have more episodes.
Yeah.
There are what people call filler episodes, but some of those I think are the most interesting episodes where it's just like, what happens when these characters go to a place and just kind of talk about stuff. Like I like that in general in quest narratives, you kind of need a little bit of, and that's why like anime often is, I mean, not the super long running ones, although there are filler episodes obviously, but like even in a 26 episode, like typical anime season one-off, like Cowboy Bebop or something like that, you have just kind of hangout episodes.
Yeah.
And I don't feel like, you know, up front, I didn't watch the entire season of the Netflix, but you can tell me if I'm wrong, but like, there's not a lot of time for people to just hang out in the Netflix series. There's just not enough time because there's too much going on.
Exactly. And I think that's it. It's just, again, like we were saying, such a tall order because it's like the cartoon, the new things, you know, a storyline. It's just like, there's not enough time. But then I also think it's like, okay, so, but you know that, right? Like, you know, there's not going to be enough time for everything. But then I feel almost like maybe they tried too hard to split the difference instead of committing. But that's just like for my tastes, you know, maybe.
Yeah.
And then if they had, I'm sure a million people would be up in arms. Like, where was Jet? Where was, you know, this, the Mechanist, et cetera, et cetera. Like, so yeah, yeah, it really is a no win, like, kind of scenario. And again, like, I love the cartoon. So, you know, just saying that I like really enjoyed the live action is a huge compliment, because like, I never thought, like, you know, like, I was never expecting anything to, like, 100% sure. equal sort of the majesty of the cartoon, you know. But I think it is good. And I think, you know, so I cried at a certain part. Certain additions were really meaningful. Certain characters really, like, knocked it out of the park. So I think it did do a good job. And I think, hopefully, with sort of confidence, it can only continue to, like, improve and maybe go deeper and complicate things and, like, yeah. So I guess that's where I fall.
Is there a ceiling for, like, the, I won't say the quality, but, like, the depth of a show like this that is it's also, like, it's still ostensibly for a younger audience, right, or a family audience,
right,
even though it is a little bit more graphic at times and the tone is certainly darker. But is there a ceiling on that type of exploration in something like this, or do you actually think that they could go as deep as is possible?
Yeah, I think it really is hard, because I think they're always held to the cartoon in certain ways, and yeah, that's not escapable. Do I personally think it would be cool if they were just like, we're adapting it. That means we could do whatever we want and do it. Like, I actually do. I think that's the point, right? But understandably, like, you don't want to infuriate millions of people by, you know, changing something really major. You know, I actually think they might seem, I don't know. I think there might be more changes than maybe people would think, but I don't know that for a fact. That's just a sense that I have. Like, maybe they will, because so another thing they took away was this idea of Sozin's Comet, which in the cartoon makes it so the three seasons take place in 1 year. And that's, like, the timeline from the first season, you know, like, by next year, we have to defeat the Fire Lord, or the world will perish. But that, obviously, they took that away from the live action. So really, like, there's no actual, the series could, like, right now, it doesn't have that endpoint. We don't know where it's going. So it could go ostensibly however long it wants to go before it's like, and now's the time we must defeat the Fire Lord. And that means, you know, it could build in things we haven't gotten before. I don't know if it will or it won't, but, you know, it doesn't have to take place in a year. And then, you know, ostensibly it takes more than a year definitely to put together even season two, right? So, like, you'll have older characters. They'll just naturally have to be older. So where does that put, you know, the story? What does that bring you to explore, you know? So I would be eager to see them be like, we were so faithful to the show in season one when the kids were young and it all matched up, but now everything's different. You know, the Fire Nation's attacked. So Netflix live action has attacked. And it's just like, you know, like, using the core and the heart of it and these characters and the allies of their story to, like, tell its own story, you know? And that's, I recognize the difficulty of that as an endeavor. But then it's like, to me, it's always like, well, if I, and I know this is a level-headed sentiment, perhaps the internet doesn't share, but I'm like, if I wanted to watch the cartoon, I can turn the cartoon on right now. It exists for me to watch, you know? Yeah. I see almost no reason to, like, need it to cleave, like, so honorably to the cartoon that it's the same, you know, like, yeah, surprise me. Why am I watching this if I'm not going to be surprised, you know?
I completely agree with you. I think, like, you owe it to the original to do something different, like, because otherwise it's just a, a shot for shot kind of beat for beat remake, and that is a choice, but it's kind of a boring choice. And I feel like, but there are like people who will be kind of upset by how much they have to change just by virtue of, you know, how different would, let's use another Netflix show as an example. How different would Stranger Things be if it were animated and they could always remain 13 years old, you know?
Exactly. Like, exactly.
It would have been 100%. Very, very different. So
100%.
I have some friends and just in general people who are like, if they love a book, for example, and it gets adapted, they are so like, well, they changed this from the book and changed this from the book and changed this from the book, and that, and ergo, they don't like it as much. And it's like, yeah, but it's a book. Like, they're completely different mediums. And and like a 61 episode animated series made a almost two decades ago at this point, like, is gonna be different than a live action series made today. Like, it just has to be. Yeah. And it ought to be, and everything, you know.
And so, just to be clear, I do think season one is different, but the way that it's different is that it built on the ideas that the cartoon offered to create new scenes that make sense sort of in that canon.
Right.
And like, that is a way to create difference. But I do think that ultimately, like, it would benefit the show to like move away from that vision of difference to like the not like this is our show, like,
yeah,
vision of difference.
Yeah. Yeah, you can keep a story the same and still change the plot. Do you know what I mean? Like, you can, or like the path or anything like that. Like, like you're saying, like, these kind of expanding scenes that were kind of just always hinted at in the cartoon, I think is a way to do it, but it does feel like you run the risk of doing kind of like fan servicey stuff, or like, you know, I've been saying this on the show for months now, but like, what I feel like most of TV Star Wars is doing is just telling you, oh, I see this happened. Oh, I remember that.
Yeah.
Like,
exactly.
Oh, I get it now. Like, did we need to see moment for moment what happened after Boba Fett fell into the Sarlacc pit until he ended up in the Mandalorian? Absolutely not. But we did. Right. We still saw it.
We sure did.
And so it was like, you know, and same with like Solo. I think there were parts of that Solo movie that were fun, but like, I didn't need to see the Kessel Run. I didn't need to see literally how.
Exactly. And I feel like,
you know,
Star Wars, it kind of is sort of different in a sense, because it's like almost inert, right? There's only so much you actually can change, or your canon continuity like doesn't make, like, you can't like make, you know, Han Solo do something totally wild or something that like won't make sense with like the actual trajectory that we know exists for the character. But something like Avatar, it's not bounded by that thing. That's, I guess, what I feel. It's like, it's not inert in that way. You could wild out. You could change something. You know what I mean? Like, and nothing is stopping that from happening in this case. So I'm like, take a swing. You know what I mean? But I don't know. I guess we'll have to see, because again, I do know that like people can get very upset. And I think this is probably sort of the safest way to do that. But then you get, I guess, a lot of fans who are like, yeah, that was fun. But maybe nobody who's like, this has changed my life. You know, I don't know.
Yeah. And I mean, like we said, like, there are people for whom like this show or the original cartoon means so much to them. And it is something they grew up with and revisit often and things like that. If you just look at like, I know this is an imperfect way to do it, but the IMDb rating is usually a decent indicator of at least how hateful people are being. And it's got a 7.4 out of 10, which is good for something like this.
You
compare it to the Cowboy Bebop one, which I think has considerably lower, we'll get up real fast, 6.7, which is actually higher than I thought it was. Literally the same number of votes, 43,000. And then One Piece, I think, has a higher one. I think
9 out of 10. Oh, wait, no, that's the anime.
Yeah.
8.3. That's amazing. Yeah.
That's still really good, especially for an adaptation. Yeah. And it's also like, I don't want to say fewer people in general watch One Piece, but fewer people have seen all of One Piece the same way.
Because I think it's
still
going,
first of all. But
I think that's true. Yeah, like they, I saw some headline be like, oh, Avatar had a much, you know, higher viewer, whatever, ship than One Piece did when it first released. And I was like, obviously, like, you know, One Piece is a huge anime, but I feel especially like in the United States, like Avatar has just this like gravitas, like, and it's so short and like consumable that many people probably have seen it and then had desire to see what the live action is like. So I think that's not surprising at all. But I guess that's kind of, I guess to me, I felt like, and again, I'm one of those people who haven't consumed all or, you know, much of at all, because I don't really like it that much, One Piece's anime. But the show, I felt, was like just amazing. Like I watched it and I felt like, yeah, I'm all about this. You know, it's just this feeling of like, I watched it and it was good. Like sometimes you watch things and you get that feeling. And it's not to say that I didn't, like I watched Avatar and I feel like I saw it and I was like, I watched that and it was enjoyable, which is like a different vibe. Not a negative vibe.
I get you.
But like didn't give me that high of like TV that I feel is seamless, you know?
Mm-hmm.
There were parts of it that I felt did. But as a whole, I was like, some things I felt maybe were clunkier, or like the story overall was not as like just smooth as it could have been, I felt. And again, I just feel like that comes from needing to piecemeal so much of the cartoon together. Like, of course, you can't like have that like one holistic story, you know, but I don't know. I think the cartoon is difficult because it does sort of do these sort of one-off adventures so much and then like sometimes gets into a overarching story.
Yeah. I mean, that's something that like, you know, I think it was with the X-Files that they came up with the term monster of the week, which I think a lot of shows now have kind of adopted that, or fandom has sort of adopted that as to mean like the non-arc stories. And that is, you know, a lot of that type of narrative. If you are sailing from place to place kind of with the bad guys on your tail, you're going to have little like one-off adventures or whatever. And I think that is something that you can only do when you have more time and when you have a season order that is like, we need 20 whatever episodes per season, and that is what you have to do. And if you don't do it, then we're going to be mad at you.
Yeah, you know? Exactly. Like a Supernatural.
Yeah.
R.I.P. Exactly. I think that's exactly right. And it's just, I feel like with the sort of live action serialized format, just with the way we expect TV to conduct itself in a live action format in this day and age, like I feel like that's a hard sell for it, which is why I am pro being like, ditch all the little cartoon side plots, choose an overarching story that comes naturally in the spirit of all of that. And that's the Zuko storyline, right? Like we see how that can happen, but it just like, I felt like it was halfway happening. Like it's happening in the Fire Nation, but not so much happening with Aang, kind of.
Yeah. Yeah. I think that's totally true. I think it's, I am looking forward to see what they do next. I will eventually finish the season. But like to your point, it was enjoyable, but it wasn't, I have to watch the next one. I was like, exactly. I think I get it. Which is maybe not what they were hoping for. I think generally it succeeded. You know what? I think it's tough when you're only playing for a tie. Do you know what I mean? Like they didn't try to outdo the original. They were only trying to be as good as, and I think that is
exactly,
it's tough. Do you think there was anything about the live action series that actually did something better than the cartoon?
Yeah, I think, again, I think better is like a very complicated word because like you suggest, I don't think that's like exactly what it was trying to do. I do think the cartoon like evolved the relationship, the live action evolved the relationship between Iroh and Zuko in ways that I felt were really meaningful. Like, I do feel it took that relationship and like gave it more time, more scenes, like more interaction between them. And I found that those scenes were like super beautiful and like really touched me. So I felt it did add to the cartoon. You know what I mean? But
yeah.
But had I been only watching the live action, you know, I don't know. You know, I feel like it still is it's based on like what was already there between Zuko and Iroh. I don't think it rebuilt what was there, but given
we just
that
get more of it.
We know what was there, it evolved.
Right.
What we had in previous. Yeah.
I'm sure it has to do with, you know, decades of people talking about how that relationship and you know, is one of their favorites on the cartoon. And there's like, well, we need to give that to, I mean, same with having Azula come in much earlier than she would have in the, normally it's like, these are characters that, and relationships that people really liked. So it's like, okay, well, let's give them that right away so that they're happy and content. Cause it, you know, if they didn't do that, they would feel cheated, even though that is like, strictly speaking, that is something that they didn't get early on in the cartoon. So it's a tough.
Yeah. Yeah. And I think just like having said that, I think that's like exactly what I feel about Avatar versus One Piece, right? Like I watched One Piece with no anime background and I loved the characters. I felt it built them from the ground up, right? I don't necessarily feel that these characters were built from the ground up in the same way, but mm-hmm. that they were, you know, it was kind of like another layer on top of the building the cartoon had done. So in that fashion, I feel like it's sort of inextricably linked to knowing what mm-hmm. the cartoon has done, you know, because do I feel like, I don't know, but again, it's hard for me because to me, they are linked because I have seen the cartoon. I don't know
right.
what somebody going in who had no knowledge of Zuko and Iroh from before would feel about the relationship between these characters, you know?
Yeah.
So for me, that's kind of it's like an interesting thought, but yeah, mm-hmm. I did think that like the additional time we got to spend with them, some new ideas, like the live action introduced the idea that like sort of the men on Zuko's ship in exile were in fact the men that he is known to have saved inadvertently almost inadvertently when he stepped to his father to begin with. So
right.
that was like this beautiful addition to the narrative that I really felt was like, yeah, like the cartoon should have done that, you know?
Mm-hmm.
So there were definitely these moments and the relationships that could shine a little more. But I guess to me, the key word is like evolved versus like created, you know?
Yeah. Yeah. These are, And I think maybe to like say what I said earlier, but flip it kind of more to a positive thing. It's they know that those relationships and those moments and those characters are going to or are important to the people who watch the cartoon. And so they want to make them important to the people just kind of turning yes. on Avatar for the first time. So it's like, okay, we got to make sure that Zuko and Iroh's relationship is set. And I do think they're so good. Like Dallas Liu and Paul Sun Hyung Lee are so good in those scenes together. And also like Paul Sun Hyung Lee, even just in that little moment when Aang is in the jail on the boat, he's like, you can tell like he represents the Fire Nation, which are the villains of the piece, but he's not a villain himself. And I think that just indicates like to the audience right away, how important it is that they're not a monolith. They're not just like this whole nation of people are evil. That's not entirely true. And also showing Absolutely. People like there are the groundswell of people trying to overthrow or at least kind of throw a wrench in the works of Ozai's kind of plan. That kind of just proves that it's like there's more going on here than just
the and army. That Fire Nation rebellion and Azula and all that wasn't in the cartoon. So like the idea of sort of rebellion sure. forces within the Fire Nation, that's something the live action like introduced, which I thought right. was great, you know, because it's like rebellions are everywhere. Even within the Fire Nation, like people do not agree kind of with with this crazy, you know, colonial dictatorial fascist regime. Yeah. Like there's more revolutions everywhere. So I thought that was, and that goes more with the sort of serious tone of the more serious tone of the live action, you know. Yeah.
But even to that, like even with all that added, which is a kind of a deeper layer to that whole storyline, you still get Lord Ozai saying flat out, "Oh, you think it's repression? I think it's safety." And it's like, okay, thanks for that. It's like, I think we got that.
Yeah. And I think, I'm not going to say it's necessarily like a mistake to keep it kind of kid oriented, because I wouldn't want to like have it lose sort of the undeniable heart of Avatar. But I do think there is a truth to the idea that the cartoon just turned 19, and like many of your core audience definitely are not children anymore. So I don't know. I don't know if whether it should be aimed. I think maybe they could have ditched the notion that it was like a kid's show for such a young kid a little bit more, you know, not maybe aimed at fully adult. I know people don't want to see it be Game of Thrones, and I certainly don't want to see it be Game of Thrones either. But I think that it's, I don't know, if I were deciding, I maybe wouldn't commit to like the idea that it was like super a kid's show, and instead be like, it's kind of a little older than what the cartoon had initially been aiming for.
Yeah. Yeah.
But that's not what they decided to do. So, you know, no. That's okay.
I know. It's hard to talk about, like, this is a thing that they didn't do. So I guess one way or the other. But
that's the choice they made. But maybe as the characters become older, they will feel maybe more comfortable to be like.
Yeah.
Yeah, because, you know, like, you know, Dallas Liu talked about his scar, and he was like, we thought about it being like intense or more intense. But in the end, it was kind of the kind of theming of the show was like more of a kid show. So they did not do that. But I think like maybe they should have. I don't know. That's my perspective. But I'm an adult who's been watching the show for 19 years. Who's like, we could have maybe like kicked it up to a little bit more of a serious place. But yeah, it is difficult. Again, I feel like I point to One Piece, which does have this delightful kind of anime goofy thing going, but also they're like, you know, punching people's heads off. So
right.
Yeah. I don't know.
I think what ultimately what we're saying is it's tough. It's tough.
Exactly.
They did as well as one could hope, I think. I don't think they revolutionized a whole lot. They didn't set the world on fire, but they definitely did a better job. I think everyone can agree that it's better than the Shyamalan movie, which is
I think so.
Which is
And I think it's interesting terrible. Because I think as we've discussed, like, they didn't revolutionize it, but they didn't, it feels, they didn't really intend to either, you know?
Correct, yeah.
So I think they accomplished what they intended to create. And we'll, you know, hopefully with more sort of, with positive reaction, with big viewing numbers, with interest in the IP, like, they can become a little bit more free to like do what the live action is doing instead of worrying about the cartoon as much. Yeah.
Yeah. It's, you know, if you haven't given this a watch, but feel like, hey, maybe it's worth checking out, or if anything we've said, you know, I would love to hear what you think about that. You can write to the show at laserfocus@nerdist.com. Yeah, it's an interesting one. This is definitely a I will say, passively watching it as I was. I wasn't there at no points was I like, oh wow, or was I like, ugh. It was kind of just like, all right, it's on. I'm enjoying it. It's fine. I think it's much more interesting to discuss that style of because anybody can rip apart a failure and anybody can sing like a praise of something that truly did something outstanding. But to just be good, to not F up, I think is a huge accomplishment in a lot of ways. So, and I don't know, you could say like, well, you didn't swing for the fences enough. You aimed for a tie, like I said, but I don't think there really was a way to overtake the cartoon in anyone's brain.
Yeah. Especially I feel like in this early season, kind of setting the tone, I think maybe they were wise to just
right
reintroduce it. Or if their their vision is like, let's get new viewers in, like then, you know, then it feels like a good entry point. It's just really hard these days because like who knows if you get to like introduce something and then build on it anymore. Like,
yeah.
But hopefully we can get that time and like having had kind of an introductory season, like they can swing a little further.
But given, you know, Netflix's production schedule, I think by the time we get to the end, Aang is going to look like he does in Legend of Korra.
Oh no.
A giant white beard.
It's a genuine concern. But again, like we were talking about with Stranger Things, hopefully that is an impetus for them
right
to take it in a little bit of a different direction. Yes. To be like, well, we can't recast Aang to being 12 every season. So given that he's probably 18, you know, or a 17, 16 at most generous, like in this next portion of the adventure, like what are we doing? So yeah. Yeah.
Yeah.
And I think those kind of constraints are like the interesting parts of changing a genre in a sense. And we'll see how that impacts.
Absolutely. Gordon Cormier, who plays Aang, is 14 currently. So like he is right on the cusp of becoming like a fully grown adult human man. So
yeah, and you gotta imagine, like even if they go as fast as possible, he'll hit 16, you know. Like,
yeah, for sure.
So
it's gonna happen.
Okay.
So we will see.
Time marches on.
Cautiously optimistic. All of these things people say when they don't want to say yay or nay. Thank you very much, Rove, for talking to me about this thing that you have literally spent hours and hours and hours thinking about.
It was my pleasure. I had a great time talking about it and like solidifying my visions of how I felt about it. And yeah, I ultimately will conclude by saying I do recommend you go watch it.
Sure.
If you haven't watched the cartoon, I would also recommend you go watch the cartoon as well as watching the live action. And if you have watched the cartoon, I would say the live action will give you some fun. Yeah. So, yeah.
They're both on Netflix right now. Give them a watch.
How coincidental.
I know. They really did a good job of shoring that up. Ro, how can people get a hold of you or your work on the internet should you wish for them to do so?
Yes, most of my work and my avatar work is on Nerdist.com, so please head on over to check that out. I'm still hanging on Twitter as Moondancer1626 and hang out on Instagram sometimes as Rotem_Rusak. I have not yet embraced any other new social platforms, but you never know what next time will bring. So that's where I am for now.
One day I will, but I also don't. I don't think so. You can follow me. yes, of course, read everything that we write on Nerdist.com. If you are a fan of Doctor Who, which I know a lot of people are, Adam Murray and I made a really fun video about the various weirdnesses of every regeneration of Doctor Who, which you can find on YouTube.com/Nerdist. Put a lot of time and effort into that one. I really would love for people to watch it and kind of enjoy my descent into madness going through all the different regenerations on the show. You can follow me on Instagram at functional_nerd. You can follow me on Letterboxd, Kyle_Anderson. I just watched a bunch of really cool old Asian movies, a Korean movie called The Housemaid, which is not, it's fairly famous now because Martin Scorsese is a champion of it, but it was really good. Also Bong Joon-ho is a big fan of it as well. So you can see what everything I'm watching on there. And, if you want to write to the show, like I said, laserfocus@nerdist.com. Okay. Thank you all for listening. Join me again next week on Laser Focus when my guest will be a different person. Bye-bye. Laser Focus is a production of Nerdist Industries and Legendary Digital Networks. It was produced, edited, and hosted by me, Kyle Anderson. For more, visit Nerdist.com.